In early January, on behalf of dozens of incarcerated New Yorkers most at risk of health consequences from COVID-19, a federal lawsuit was filed against Governor Andrew Cuomo for the state's quote-unquote deliberate indifference in its handling of the pandemic, especially with regards to the use of an upstate prison facility as a de facto nursing home. The lawsuit, filed by the Legal Aid Society and the civil rights law firm Relman Colfax, maintains that inmates at the upstate facility receive substandard care that put them at greater risk of the deadly virus. To discuss the case, we're joined now by Stephen Short, supervising attorney for the Legal Aid Society's Prisoners' Rights Project. Hello, Stephen.
Thanks so much for having me.
And also on the line with us is Rebecca Livengood, counsel at Relman Colfax. Welcome, Rebecca.
Hi, thanks for having us.
So really, ever since the arrival of the novel coronavirus, there have been concerns about the response by the state's prisons to this pandemic. So, Stephen, what prompted this lawsuit now, about 9 months into the public health emergency and about 6 months after the state created this sort of upstate prison nursing home?
Well, what prompted the lawsuit were continuing poor conditions at Adirondack Correctional Facility. So it is true, you know, the state started transferring elderly and medically vulnerable people to Adirondack about 6 months ago. You know, what we found in our investigation is that despite the fact that the population at the facility is extremely medically vulnerable, and despite the fact that if these folks get COVID, they may suffer very serious consequences, the state hasn't taken any additional measures or really any measures at all to protect their health. And so that's what prompted the lawsuit. And it's very much a continuation of what we're seeing at a lot of the facilities around the state. But in consideration of just how vulnerable this population is, we felt the need to take action.
Yeah, Rebecca, can you describe this North Country facility, how it's being utilized, and what some of the problems are as you see it?
Yeah, of course. So until last summer, Adirondack had been a youth prison. And in the spring and summer, all of the kids who had been there were moved out, and folks who were over 60 with underlying medical conditions were moved in. And so there are currently about 100 people there. In that category. And it, you know, as that transition suggests, it was really not equipped to handle a population so medically vulnerable. So from what we can tell, there are no doctors on staff. It is very far from the closest hospital that could accept people who are coming from prison. And they were really sort of making it up as they went along. So all of the added protections that would be necessary for a population with heightened vulnerability are not present in Adirondack. It is very much a prison that has recently been turned into somewhere to house older people. We are now in the worst phase of COVID cases in the country, and especially with the new variant that has been found in upstate New York, we think, if anything, people are more vulnerable than they've ever been at Adirondack.
So what are you hoping to accomplish with this lawsuit? Are you looking for changes in policies that would be theoretically mandated by a court ruling?
Yes, that's right. I mean, the two main areas that we are looking to change both drive at the underlying aim of making people in Adirondack safer from COVID. And so on the one hand, it is limiting the entry of the virus into the facility, both by limiting transfers and halting transfers until they can be done safely, and then by changing policies within the prison to reduce the likelihood of spread if the virus does come in.
In terms of reducing the spread in a facility, what does that consist of?
So currently at Adirondack, unlike other DOCS prisons, people are not allowed to eat in their cells. So the prison is made up of housing units of about 20 people each. And at mealtimes, three housing units eat together in the dining hall. So several times a day, people from housing units across the prison are mingling without masks and being forced to eat in those conditions. So one thing would be allowing folks to eat in their rooms. But more broadly, we have found that even when there has been a confirmed case of COVID in the prison, their reaction has been very lackluster. There's been a failure to quarantine folks who have come into contact with someone who's positive, a failure to retest to understand the scope of the outbreak. And so in addition to these conditions changes, a broadly changed response to quarantining and testing when there is a known positive case is really necessary to make sure that they're able to identify and contain any outbreak there.
The State Department of Corrections says its policies are based on science and crafted in consultation with the State Department of Health. In launching this lawsuit, what medical professionals or expertise did you guys utilize to file the complaint?
So we have both a medical expert and an epidemiologist have served as experts here and so consulted with us in evaluating the policies and the safety of the current policies and in giving guidance about what safe policies might look like. So Jeffrey Shaman from Columbia is the epidemiologist who consulted with us, and he submitted a declaration along with our PI motion. And Mark Fennig from Einstein is our medical expert.
We're talking about a lawsuit filed against the state for its handling of the pandemic in prisons. And our guests are Stephen Short, supervising attorney for the Legal Aid Society, and Rebecca Livengood, counsel at Realm and Colfax. Prisons, especially in New York, can often be hard institutions to glean information about, even if you're just trying to be a reporter and deal with a prison spokesperson. So I'm curious, how are you guys collecting anecdotes that are the basis for this complaint? Are you getting access to prisoners, or are you hearing from the friends and family of the incarcerated New Yorkers?
Yeah, well, I mean, the Legal Aid Society has been in contact with hundreds upon hundreds of incarcerated people and family members and friends since the beginning of the pandemic. And through that information stream came reports out of Adirondack early after the transfers occurred about how serious the conditions were there and the extent to which the department was ignoring the best practices on quarantining, isolation, and several other best practices to contain the pandemic. We have spoken with several incarcerated people at Adirondack, and our plaintiffs have also shared their experiences, which are chronicled in the complaint. In addition, you know, there is certainly an informational asymmetry between the Legal Aid Society and the department, but we have repeatedly asked the department for information about conditions at Adirondack and more broadly conditions in all prisons during the course of the pandemic. And, you know, we've been able to glean really what the community's been able to glean, not a whole lot of additional information directly from the department about what's going on. So we do rely on client reports. And, you know, certainly as the complaint details, what our clients have experienced is nothing short of a total indifference and a total lack of normed practices to deal with this pandemic. And certainly our organizational plaintiff, the Release Aging People in Prison campaign, has been gathering information from incarcerated people at Adirondack throughout the course of the pandemic. And, you know, their reports also indicate very serious conditions. So, yes, you know, we do rely on client reports and they're chronicled in our filings.
Now that this lawsuit has been filed, what's next for the case? What are certain timetables that you guys are looking forward to?
We've moved for a preliminary injunction in this case. And what that means is that we've requested essentially emergency relief from the court to remediate some of the serious conditions issues that we're challenging. We do anticipate that shortly, you know, within the month, that preliminary injunction motion should be decided. Obviously, you know, the quicker the better here. You know, our clients are in dire straits. And so that's the next step in the case, is litigating that preliminary injunction motion. And, you know, in addition to what we're doing in this case, we're going to continue to put pressure on the agency and put pressure on political actors to exercise the political will to respond to the situation at Adirondack and the situation more broadly. And that means taking the steps that we know are most important to stem the spread of this virus. That means vaccines. That means releases from prison. I mean, this is but one part of a larger effort to attempt to force the state to meet the moment and take all the steps necessary to prevent spread within Adirondack and more broadly.
I'm glad you mentioned the vaccine, because up until this point in the pandemic, the conversation about keeping people safe, whether in prisons or out in public, has largely been about preventative measures like social distancing and adequate protective gear. But now with a vaccine being deployed, there's a new way to protect New Yorkers. So, Stephen, where do the state's inmates fit into the current vaccination queue set up by the governor?
Well, we have desperately tried to get clarification on where incarcerated people fit in the scheduling for vaccination, and we have not been able to obtain that clarification. Last week, a state official indicated that incarcerated people would fall in group 1B, which would mean they would be vaccinated starting sometime in February. Later on, we got word that that may not be accurate, and we've been reaching out to state officials to try to get clarity on that. Now, obviously, we saw that certain correctional officials have been placed in the queue for vaccination. And, you know, the bottom line is what this pandemic has exposed is the extent to which the life and health of correctional officers is bound up with the life and health of incarcerated people. So really, it's our position that incarcerated people should be vaccinated right along with corrections officers and that they should be prioritized for vaccination. But the state has not responded to our calls for clarity on that. And we would hope, you know, that in addition to any conditions changes, there's also a concerted effort to vaccinate folks as soon as possible.
Well, this week alone, the development have been the broadening of eligibility for vaccinations to the point where, as we speak on Tuesday, the governor recently opened up the window to New Yorkers 65 and older. So if I'm, you know, an inmate who's 65 and older, how do I go about applying for a vaccination? I mean, I know my parents theoretically can go online or make a call if they can get through, but what does that mean for someone who's in a state prison? Do they have access to the internet? Can they make a phone call like this and wait to, you know, on hold for forever?
Right. So unfortunately, prisons are black holes for information. And unfortunately, our clients are at the whim of corrections officials and facility level staff for all medical care needs. And our understanding is, you know, that would include a vaccination need. And the state has not put out any guidance for our clients or guidance for family members or friends as to how incarcerated people will go about getting vaccinated. So in addition to the fact that we're not sure where incarcerated people fit in scheduling, we're also not sure what vaccination will look like logistically. And that's yet another failure in the state's COVID response, right? You know, first, the state failed to provide sufficient information to our clients and to their family members about certain interventions that were being taken in facilities on quarantining, isolation, social distancing, et cetera. Now the state is failing to provide sufficient information on vaccine scheduling and how folks go about obtaining a vaccine once they're approved to get one. So, I mean, this is just yet another example of a failure, and we're obviously concerned about that lack of information, and our concerns about medical care in prisons generally, you know, are also implicated by this. What is it going to look like when somebody needs to go down to medical to get a vaccine? Are they really going to have access to that? Will there be interference with access to the vaccine? I mean, these are all questions that we're concerned about and we need answers to.
Just to your point about the broadening of eligibility for the vaccine, Governor Cuomo has been extremely aggressive about vaccine delivery outside of prison. And the comparative silence on folks who are incarcerated is both very concerning and telling about Governor Cuomo's priorities.
Well, we've been talking about the effort, or lack thereof in some cases, to deal with COVID-19 in New York State's prisons. And our guests have been Stephen Short, supervising attorney for the Legal Aid Society's Prisoners' Rights Project, and Rebecca Livengood, counsel at the civil rights law firm Relman Colfax. Thank you both so much for making the time.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Capitol Press Room, which you can take with you on the go wherever you download podcasts. Our engineer in Syracuse is Dave White. My producer in Albany is Tim Williams. I'm David Lombardo. Thanks for listening. Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.